Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On Election Day, 5 states will vote to legalize recreational marijuana. California, Arizona, Maine, Massachusetts, and Nevada. I should say they will vote whether to legalize recreational marijuana. An additional 4 states will vote on legalizing medical marijuana: Arkansas, Florida, Montana, and North Dakota. According to the CalMatters voter guide, here in California, Proposition 64 would allow people 21 and older to grow up to 6 pot plants at home, possess up to an ounce of marijuana, and use it for recreational purposes. It would allow the state, cities, and counties to regulate and tax the growing and the sale of non-medical marijuana. And a couple of weeks ago, we had a debate about Proposition 64, and you can find that at yourcallradio.org. In 2012, Colorado became the first state in the country to legalize the recreational use of marijuana. There are now 25,000 marijuana distribution and sales centers operating in the state, and this year the state's revenue from marijuana taxes and fees could reach $1.2 billion. So on today's Your Call, we are discussing the impacts of marijuana legalization by looking at states like Colorado. If Prop 64 passes here in California, what should we expect? To explore these issues, we are joined by 2 guests. John Hudak is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and author of the new book, Marijuana, A Short History. And John Hudak joins us from Washington, D.C. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Rose.
It's great to have you. We are also joined by Alicia Wallace, National Marijuana Policy and Business Reporter for The Cannabist. That is a project of the Denver Post. And Alicia joins us from Denver, Colorado. Hi, Alicia. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Rose. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. Alicia, I want to start off with you because you just wrote an interesting piece called Where is Marijuana Legalized? Map of U.S. Marijuana Laws by State. And, you know, so many people I talk to say, I never thought I would see this in my lifetime, just to see things move so quickly. And you write that the legalization of marijuana in this country has been moving at a breakneck speed in recent years. What really explains this?
Well, you know, it's just an advance in a variety of areas. One big area is that public opinion has shifted, and I think in terms of why we're seeing such a pickup now is you look at what our state has done. When we voted in the recreational sales in 2012, and those sales started in 2014. To have not just medical use sales, but recreational sales in an industry that hasn't completely blown up and had all these kind of dire Reaper Madness type of experiences occur here, but it has been operating somewhat successfully. So say our chief medical officer of the state and the head of our marijuana enforcement division. And so once you see some states like Colorado and Washington be able to kind of develop a full-on business sector with this, and you see that there hasn't been like I said, all these dire consequences play out in the medical or the recreational states, I think more and more people think, well, perhaps there is some potential benefit here as well, be it in taxes or research or other areas.
Right, and it's been amazing to see just the revenue in the tax stream, and we'll talk about that a little later in the show.
Sure.
What are your thoughts, John? What do you think explains the speed with which these laws are passing?
Well, I agree with everything Alicia said, and for your listeners, one of the best outlets in the world on this topic is The Cannabist, and Alicia writes some top-notch items on that. But to your question, there are a lot of factors explaining it. Like Alicia said, people are looking around the country and seeing recreational and medical marijuana programs starting up and proceeding, and the sky really not falling, and all of the fears that exist from opponents of it are not quite coming to fruition. But there's more than that. There is a real public opinion change happening in this country. For some people, it is because they experience using marijuana, or they see people around them using marijuana, and that makes them a bit more comfortable with it. But the people who oppose marijuana reform the most are the oldest individuals in our country. So about 38% of people over the age of 65 support marijuana reform. But if you look at millennials, at people under 30, the people turning 18 and becoming voting age eligible, support for marijuana reform for recreational use is about 80%. So that process of generational replacement, I mean, it sounds harsh, it sounds crass, but as people die off who are not supporting marijuana reform in high numbers and are being replaced by younger people who support it at the highest rates in our society, that really pushes public opinion in the direction of reform, and it can really do so rapidly. And I think that has part of the explanation of why we've seen reform happen so aggressively in the past, you know, 5 years.
Well, and John, you can stay with us for the first 30 minutes. And so I wanted to talk with you about the major changes that are happening as a result of marijuana legalization, the recreational use. And we were talking earlier about the tax revenue, which we'll discuss in a couple of minutes. But I also wanted to talk to you about the drug war and arrests, because there's a new report out from Human Rights Watch and the ACLU, and Alicia wrote about this. It found that drug possession lands someone in handcuffs every 25 seconds in the United States. Every 25 seconds. Despite the scales tipping in favor of marijuana legalization, pot arrests outnumber those for violent crimes, according to this report. So, John, is it too soon to look at how this has changed in states where marijuana is now legal, like Colorado, for example? What's really changed when you look at arrests?
So I'll be honest, I'm someone who is cautious about the use of data when we're looking at what reform has meant. Because in a lot of states, even in Colorado, which was the first state to legalize along with Washington, but was the first state to get sales on the shelves, they did not start commercial sales of recreational marijuana until January of 2014. And so when we look back, we just don't have a lot of great data for people who want to make their point. And that's true for the reform community, and that's true of opponents. But your question touches on one where we do have good data, because arrest data can happen. We can get that data almost in real time. And what we've seen in states that have legalized marijuana, like Colorado, possession arrests have plummeted, you know, as much as 95%.
Wow.
And that is significant in states that are sending a lot of young people, and a lot of particularly young people of color, into the criminal justice system for the first time. I think no matter what you think of whether reform is a good thing or a bad thing, I don't think most people want an individual's life ruined and facing the economic challenges of an arrest, because they're caught with a joint. And I think that the reforms that have happened in four states at the recreational level in D.C. help overcome those types of cultural, societal, and criminal justice issues that are really affecting a lot of people in this country, but particularly affecting communities of color.
So arrests went down 95% in Colorado?
So some of the reporting I've seen have had numbers that high. Now, this is, of course, for simple possession arrest, but when you look at marijuana as the most commonly used illegal drug in our country, it makes sense that there are a lot of arrests that would happen because of that. Now, it's not to say, of course, that every person who is arrested for marijuana possession is only committing that single crime. I think it's important to put that into perspective. A lot of people get arrested for a variety of issues, and then along the way, they're also caught for possessing marijuana. So it's not to say that all of those arrests are going away, but at least the charges for marijuana possession are. And I think that has significant impacts in a lot of areas of our society.
And you wrote about this report, Alicia. Again, Human Rights Watch and the ACLU found that drug possession lands someone in handcuffs every 25 seconds. A disproportionate number of those arrested are African Americans who smoke marijuana at rates similar to whites, but are arrested and prosecuted far more often for having small amounts for personal use, according to the study. So as someone who has, you cover marijuana in Colorado extensively, what really struck you about this report and how things will change once recreational marijuana becomes legal across the country?
Well, you know, in terms of the racial and economic disparity highlighted in the report, that is something we've been seeing, and we see here in our state still. It's, you know, I think that goes into a broader conversation about policing and, you know, as well as other economic and racial matters, but looking specifically at when cannabis is legalized in a state, what kind of effect that has. I mean, if you look at what's happened in Colorado, one can assume that it could make an effect in other states, have a similar effect. However, I want to remain cautious as to predicting or projecting anything of that nature. But you also have, it's going to be a national drug policy, drug enforcement as well. The nation's drug czar told Politico recently that he's aware of these numbers and this disparity. Mm-hmm. And in terms of criminalizing people for their drug use and for addiction is something that he has a close eye on and would like to change. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens from both as more and more states come online and legalize, but also from more of a national policy level. So it's there are a lot of factors playing into this, but I think this is an issue that has risen to the top of a lot of people's minds, and so I think we'll see a lot of change here coming forth.
Mike Mayles, a senior research fellow at the Center on Juvenile and Criminal Justice, looked at marijuana arrest data from before and after legalization in Colorado and Washington. And as you said, John, the drop in arrests in Colorado were about 95%. In Washington, 90%. I mean, this is massive. But he found that the racial disparity in arrests did not budge. In both states, post-legalization arrest rates for blacks were just over double that for non-blacks, just as it was before legalization. So can you talk about that, John?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Those data are ones that I have looked at too, and you're right, the racial disparities have not dropped. And so racial disparities in marijuana arrests are troubling for a variety of reasons. First, I think you look at it and you think, well, we've legalized marijuana, so this fixes all of the problems, but there are still a lot of individuals and a lot of people of color being arrested, even though usage rates between whites and non-whites are effectively identical. Hmm. And so legalization can help with reducing the number of arrests, but there is something deeper about this racial disparity. Part of it is certainly cultural. There are individuals in police departments who are approaching this issue in probably the wrong way, but it's not so much, or we shouldn't put all of that onus on the idea of police going into communities of color and perpetrating this disparity. The reality is, policing in communities of color is more aggressive, it is more constant. I think whatever city you live in, if you go into a community of color, you are more likely to see more police officers in a wealthy white community. And there are a variety of reasons for that, and they are not all sinister. But if more police around, your likelihood of being arrested, I would say, would increase. And so there are certain structural elements within our society and within the policing of our society that can lead to this. I think some of it is cultural and problematic and a problem that needs to be addressed with better police training, but part of it too is just the nature of policing in the United States. And we would love to get to a point in our society where there is no racial disparity in arrests of any kind, but we do see it continuing even post-legalization around marijuana.
Yes, and that speaks volumes. And it will be so interesting to look at the legalization rates if voters approve Proposition 64 to legalize recreational marijuana in California, because according to this report from the ACLU and Human Rights Watch, in California, illicit drug possession arrests account for 1 in 7 arrests, much higher than Colorado, which is 1 in 20 arrests. John, every article I've been reading about this issue says if California passes Prop 64, I mean, it just changes the game. And so all eyes will be on what happens here. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Colorado is one of the largest markets in the country for any consumer good, And if California changes its consumer behavior around anything, it has national implications. That is particularly true around marijuana. This is a state that has an enduring relationship with marijuana, whether it is the current medical market, which in some ways is a gray market where people are accessing it even though they might not need it for medicinal use. But even on the illicit market, marijuana is a significant player in that state. And if you legalize it, all of that, or not all of it, but a significant amount of it comes out into the open. The state can collect tax revenue, but it has national implications for the way that we think about this as an economic force, as a regulatory force, and you might start to see national level change after California because the market will grow so significantly, and I think the conversation will also change significantly.
John Hudak is senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and author of the new book, Marijuana, A Short History. We're also joined by Alicia Wallace, national marijuana policy and business reporter for The Cannabist. That's a project of the Denver Post. And today we are talking about the sweeping changes we are seeing across the country when it comes to the legalization of recreational marijuana. Right now, we've got 5 states voting to legalize recreational marijuana on Election Day. We're going to do it in California, Prop 64, Arizona, Maine, Massachusetts, and Nevada. And Alicia, it's been amazing to read about what's happening in Colorado. One of your recent stories is called California Pot Shops Sold a Record-Breaking Amount of Marijuana in August. Legal marijuana shops tallied up to $126 million in medical and recreational cannabis in August, setting a new monthly record. This is according to the Colorado Department of Revenue. So a lot of people are getting high and eating edibles in Colorado, and it's been also fascinating to watch how much tax revenue this is bringing in and how that money is being spent. Can you give us a quick overview of that?
Sure. And it's one of those things, and it all needs to be put in context. It quickly has become, last year, it had nearly $1 billion in sales for last year. And we're going to surpass that this year just based on the trajectory we're seeing right now. So I think it'll probably end up, above $1.2 billion, $1.3 billion in revenue. To kind of keep that in perspective though, we have it's just a drop in the bucket when you look at the state's general fund and the state budget. It's only I think it's just shy of 1%. I need to double check that figure. It's been a little bit since I looked at that, but so we, you know, it's not this saving grace for our state budget and for schools that are missing out on funds. That being said, this a good portion of this revenue is going towards schools, toward capital construction prices. One of the economists at the Colorado Fiscal Institute has frequently said to help put this in perspective, that the marijuana industry hires roofers, not teachers. So we're seeing this money go toward new roofs, toward new school buildings. Other cities, in addition to using it for their schools, have used it for drug education programs and to help the homeless population. And so these communities are, it is a new revenue source, and it's not a big amount when put into perspective, but it is some additional money for these public areas.
And it's bringing in more tax revenue than alcohol, right?
At this point in time, like I said, I need to look at the numbers, but yes, you know, I believe that is the case.
And so, John, when you look at the taxes, the differences between Colorado and California, according to many reports, California would probably bring in about $1 billion in marijuana tax revenue every year, and projections say it's just going to continue to go up.
Well, that's right. I think Alicia's caution on this is an important one, and one that most people should take seriously. Some people sort of sell marijuana reform as this beautiful budget miracle that is going to help states. And Alicia's absolutely right. It has meant significant amounts of money in Colorado, but it is not a driving force helping the Colorado budget. And the same will be true in California. It's important to remember, you know, even if California brings in $1 billion in tax and fee revenue in a year, that is a very small part of the annual budget for the California state government. And so while people are weighing these issues, I think additional tax revenue, particularly for something that is common in society, for a market that is already in existence just in the illegal, just as an illegal market, that tax revenue is something the state can certainly capitalize on, but it's not something that is going to dig California out of a giant budget deficit if it were to encounter one again. And so, is the tax revenue significant and meaningful? Yes. Will it help, as Alicia said, put new roofs on schools or help with other types of infrastructure? Absolutely. But I would caution people against believing that this is some manna from heaven in terms of balancing a state's books.
And the tax rate's really high. In California, I think it's, 25%? Colorado?
So tax rates are significant. Oh, sorry, Alicia.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, John. You can go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, tax rates are significant in a lot of states. The states that have legalized, they have significant rates. In Colorado, there's a 15% excise tax, a 10% special marijuana tax, plus state sales tax and local taxes, and it can add up quite a bit. But what you're seeing is that while that may drive some people away from the legal market and to remain in the illicit market, there are still significant sales of this product, even despite prices, in the legal market, because I think people are looking for a safe product, something that is regulated, something that they know what they're getting, and they don't have to worry about law enforcement if they're accessing it through the legal market. So even though taxes are high, it's still motivating individuals, consumers, economic actors to choose the legal market over the illegal market.
And John, what are the major changes between, say, Colorado and Washington's law compared with California's initiative? And what do you think we should learn from the states where marijuana is now legal?
Well, I think California has actually learned quite a bit from the states that have legalized, and I think that's one of the most remarkable aspects of marijuana reform so far in the United States. This is true of recreational, and this is true for medical as well. States are looking to other states. You know, the people who drafted the new California medical regulations, and then ultimately the California ballot initiative for recreational, looked to Colorado. They talked to the regulators in Colorado. They talked to regulators in other states, and they said, what are your best practices? What is working for you? But most importantly, what is not working for you? Mm-hmm. So things like lab testing and making sure that labeling and testing and titration is is top-notch, is ready to go on day one, is something that California has thought very hard about and has tried to overcome what were some serious weaknesses in the Colorado program as it rolled out. Now, Colorado has since resolved some of those things, but if you consider the states the laboratories of democracy, which they are supposed to do, I think marijuana is one of the best laboratories in terms of policy learning and in terms of improving public policy over time and across states.
John, any other differences between what we're seeing in states where it's legal and what we can expect in California?
Sure. So California has also put forward lower tax rates than some of the other states. And I think that's a sensible way of understanding that if taxes are too high, people are not going to access the legal market. So if you look at Washington State initially, Washington State had between a 50 and 75% tax at the price point when they first rolled out. Well, they realized quickly that that was too high of a tax rate if they wanted to drive people into the legal market. And so they reduced their taxes fairly significantly after the fact. Well, California looked at that and realized that the tax issue was one that had meaningful effects on the market. And so they put into place lower taxes, hoping that the market in general, which is already robust in California, would motivate people to go to the white market rather than the illegal market. I think that's a really impressive move by the state to look at this from a realistic point of view.
And I know we have to let you go, but I'm curious what your thoughts are about all of the money being poured into Prop 64 here in California, about almost $20 million for the yes side and about $2.4 million for the no side. A lot of tech moguls are funding Prop 64, including former Facebook President Sean Parker. Who's going to reap the major benefits if marijuana becomes legal in California?
Well, if marijuana becomes legal in California, it will certainly create and grow an industry. And so people are going to make money off of this like they would off of any consumer product. I think when you look out at California, you see a lot of people who are reform-oriented. You see a lot of people who are quite wealthy and also reform-oriented. And so people think, I think there's this bias, this idea that if a lot of money is pouring into a legalization campaign, that is a bad thing. But the reality is people are pouring money into initiatives all over the country. In Nevada, for instance, you have an energy initiative on the ballot, a marijuana legalization initiative on the ballot, as well as a background checks for guns initiative. And a lot of money is pouring into that. But that is democracy. That is people having their voice heard. And California this year have had a lot of people having their voices heard on the yes side for Prop 64. And even though people find that problematic, I think it's part of our democracy, and it's part of what motivates, or rather what moves the needle in California, a very expensive state to run a ballot initiative.
Well, there's definitely going to be a lot of money made. I'm already seeing a number of billboards from the group Weed Maps, which is also funding Prop 64. John, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
John Hudak is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and author of the new book, Marijuana, A Short History. And sticking with us for the rest of the hour is Alicia Wallace, national marijuana policy and business reporter for The Cannabist. It's The Cannabist, a project of the Denver Post. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW, a show that relies on engaged listeners. You can join today's conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's toll-free, 866-798-8255. And you can post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org, or you can tweet us at yourcallradio. Coming up at 11 o'clock this morning, it's the BBC's World Have Your Say. They'll be talking about three things: stand by your spouse, on the ground in Mosul, and Hitler's house, should it be torn down? That's BBC's Have Your Say, coming up in just a half an hour.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will speak with organizers and directors with Superfest, the world's longest-running disability film festival. You can find information about that online. And then on Thursday, we will have a post-debate show. Tomorrow night, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump will take the stage for one last debate. And then for our special election Your Call show tomorrow at 11, we'll be joined by San Francisco Supervisor Jane Kim, who is running to replace Mark Leno in the state Senate. Mark is being termed out. We had him on last week's show. Jane Kim is running against Supervisor Scott Wiener. We also had Scott on a couple of weeks ago, and you can find that show at yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about marijuana. On Election Day, five states will vote to legalize recreational marijuana: California, Arizona, Maine, Massachusetts, and Nevada. An additional four states will vote on legalizing medical marijuana: Arkansas, Florida, Montana, and North Dakota. We did have a debate about Proposition 64 a couple of weeks ago, but today we're really talking about what we can learn from states like Colorado and Washington, where it's already legal. So if you have any questions for today's guest, Alicia Wallace, national marijuana policy and business reporter with The Cannabist, that's a project of the Denver Post, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Alicia, I know that you specifically focus on Colorado, but you've also written about other states like Washington and Oregon. And I noticed doing the research, I don't really read that much about Alaska and what's happening there. Does anything really strike you about marijuana legalization in Alaska?
You know, I know that they're still in the process of kind of finding their footing on this issue. Mm-hmm. There have been some hiccups in terms of that recreational market.